This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 562 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuddersIncPodcast.com, and joining me once again from Melbourne, Victoria, it is Mr. Glyn Lavender from CreativePhotoWorkshops.com.au, the phoenix of the photographic workshop world, risen from the ashes.
Huh?
Huh? What?
What? Speak up. Speak up.
How are you,
we're mate? Not in Phoenix, mate. We're in Melbourne.
That's right.
I thought after all these years you'd know that.
You would think. How have you been?
The Ashes, isn't that cricket?
That's right.
Yes. We're talking about, this is a photography podcast. What are you talking cricket for? My God, the man's delusional. Oh. I'd like to apologise, listener.
You've only just worked that out.
Oh, look, I just got a weekly report from my screen time just came up. My time was up, I don't know how, it was up 47% last week.
What?
Down 47%.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, here we go. No, it's just come to do. No, your screen time was up 8%. That's better. For an average, this is my phone, for an average of 17 hours and 48 minutes a day.
Jeez. How do you do that?
17 hours, 48 a day. That's only up 8%. That's kind of, yeah.
Do you just walk around the house dragging an extension cord with you that's got a charger plugged into your phone?
Yeah, my very presence keeps it charged, dude. Right. Just the static electricity from me.
I expected you to come back and say, well, the flaw in that argument is that I don't move around the house.
What is it? That too. Yeah, my feet are never on the floor. That's the floor in that argument. Yeah.
Dear. So what have you been up to in the last 3 weeks?
It's been 3 weeks.
I believe so. I think we were due last week.
I was wondering why you were messaging. Honestly, I thought we did one last week, and I was wondering why you were messaging me to do another one this week. Yeah. Sure, it's only been a couple of days.
Feels like it.
Man's crazy.
Yeah.
I presented my dear wife with photos of the children for Mother's Day.
Nice.
No, for her birthday. Her birthday was May 6th, so that's a pain in the ass. She's hard enough to buy for. Yeah. Then she goes and has her birthday right near Mother's Day.
Yep.
I mean, what was she thinking?
Yeah.
Yeah, so when the... she was over out with on a girls' night out, and I planned to take the kids out for a photo shoot to get some nice professional photos rather than just happy snappies.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, she was rather pleased. So it's nice to actually, you know, take some proper photos of the kids rather than just, yeah. I said, the snapperoonies, which you tend to do with your when your iPhone's around. I did some landscape photography.
Yes, I saw.
Strange, but the experience. So here, let me tell you a story, Bruce.
Yeah. This would be good.
I'll tell you. Probably not. but I'm going to tell that anyway because we've got no content and this will help fill up a bit of space. you may have heard or possibly even seen on the interwebs.
Yeah.
It was a bit of an aurora over the weekend.
I had noticed.
Had you really?
There were a couple of instances of evidence of such.
Yeah, well, apparently. So the biggest solar event extended period of time since 1932.
What?
Yeah. So it's the longest, pretty much close to the longest recorded, as far as keeping it at a peak activity for over a 24-hour period.
Wow.
The highest and longest since 1932.
Typical.
Typical. Why?
Because I was here and we had solid cloud cover and rain.
Oh, of course. Because I had people up in Townsville taking photos of it.
Wow.
Yeah. So actually, I've got a couple of funny stories. So it's the biggest aurora, as it's certainly anyone
in living memory has ever seen.
Well, certainly in the digital age.
Yeah, right.
You know, as far as where you could get information far, certainly in the age of the internet. The last sort of really big one was 1989, where it took out all of Quebec's electric system.
Wow.
Didn't have that effect this time around. It's 1989, then there's another big one in 2003. The 2003 one went technically slightly higher than this, but as far as the amount of energy.
Oh, okay.
But not for its duration. So it gave people, I mean, I had photos from literally all over the world. Not literally. Anywhere within a reasonable proximity, say 10,000 kilometres from the pole.
Yeah.
All right. For either North or South Pole.
Yeah.
And, I've photos of people in North London taking photos of that. Florida, in all sorts of places we just would never imagine. Yeah. So thousands of those. So knowing this was coming, because I'm on a couple of Facebook groups for auroras, that the knowledge these people have is really quite remarkable, and they can give you a 1.5 hours advance notice of when it's going to hit, and when it's going to peak, and if it's dropped off, they can give you a notice of how long it's going to be before the next peak, and also you can keep incredibly detailed track of what's happening to know whether it's time to go home or whether you should stay longer because it's going to get good, all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So news is coming for a few days out, so I decided and it was going to be on a Saturday night, so but let's take the kids out and see if we can see something, because there was a chance it's going to be visible to the naked eye as opposed to the normal visible to camera. So long story, getting longer, a couple of days beforehand my wife's been going through absolute hell at work. And just psychological warfare basically on her. And she's incredibly stressed, and she broke out in hives from stress, really bad. And just her entire body just inflamed and rash everywhere and raised lumps and itchy like crazy and burning and just. And my wife, I mean, she gave birth naturally twice and didn't even go ow once.
Right.
My second kid broke her coccyx bone whilst being delivered. Didn't say a word.
Yikes. Yeah.
This woman's crying in pain, so I know she's in pain. For her to exhibit, I mean, and she lives with me, she's used to pain, so she has a very high tolerance to pain, psychological and physical. So that was pretty bad. That's like Thursday night. It kind of went down during the day and kind of flared up a bit again on middle of Friday. Then Friday night, she was in just absolute agony. Almost let's call an ambulance. Agony.
Yeah, right.
But by Saturday morning, it calmed down. So it was kind of a watch and wait kind of thing. And she hadn't slept all night. So she kind of slept for most of Saturday. Come Saturday evening, towards early evening, it starts to flare up again. It's like, oh, no, I'm going to go out and shoot Trigger and Aurora. Honey, you're really starting to inconvenience me now. You know, it was bad enough when you were in pain, but now I might be suffering. Now, as we know, when it comes to men, that takes the most important part of everything. So it was like, take some more antihistamine stuff and just watch. And she goes, yeah, I think I'll be okay. And if we go down here to this particular spot. So she goes, where do you want to go? So if we go to this place called Campbell's Cove that I know of, that I did a workshop shoot years ago down there, like 12, 15 years ago down there, and it was pretty cool. I'm pretty sure it'd be facing south over the water and stuff, and there's some like little boat ramps and some structure to have in your photo, not just sky. So I said, if we go there, then we're not too far away from Werribee Hospital. So if we have to do a dash, we could. So we drove down to this Campbell's Cove. And I said, 10 to 15 years ago, and I'm sure I talked about this in the past, 10 to 15 years ago, we were down this place doing this shoot with this model on a pier. And this huge guy, this guy who made me look small, and I'm six, for those who don't know, I'm 6'2", about 230 pounds. And this guy, I don't know, he made me small, comes stomping up along these boat sheds with an axe handle over his shoulder.
Right.
And the guy's enormous. He's like Andre the Giant, not quite that big, but he was big. He was maybe 6'5" and 300 pounds, axe handle. Yeah, big bushy beard and like a bushman's hat on. He was a rough and tough type, And he comes and goes, "What are you doing?" And I told the group, "Stay here. I'll look after this, guys." And I went up to the guy. I said, "Oh, we're just taking some photos. We'll be gone soon. I promise you." It wasn't quite like that, but probably inside it wouldn't have been far off. And I just explained. He goes, "Oh, do you want to take some photos of me?" And this guy was a great looking character. So hell's yes. So dump the model, and we're shooting this guy with his axe handle leaning against these boat sheds and stuff, and.
Nice.
Got a couple of really cool shots of him. Yeah. So I've always remembered this spot fondly. because of this,
of course.
And there's, I don't know, there's probably seven or eight boat sheds down there, so it's a fairly decent sort of size area. So we go down there. Sure enough, we're driving in, and there's a dirt track to get into the area, and there's half a dozen cars already there, people lined up taking photos over the water. So we trundle past. I get to the boat shed area. There's no one there. This is the best part of the entire area. Not a soul.
Wow.
So this is weird. So we hop out, and the kids are there. They're all rugged up because it's blowing a gale.
Yeah.
And you can see the aurora to the naked eye straight away. As soon as you get out of the car, you can see it.
Nice.
Yeah. So glowing red in the sky. Probably at that stage, it would have gone a third of the way up the sky.
Wow.
I'd say. And you couldn't quite see the green, but you could certainly see red at that stage. So anyway, we trundled down and start the first shot I take, I'm just guessing exposure. Yeah, so I did 2.8, 20 seconds, 400 ISO.
Yep.
Perfect. Bang. So it didn't change exposure the entire night. I don't know if it could have been better or worse. Because I didn't do one single setting change. Nice. So that's a typical non-landscape photographer approach to things. Oh, that looks all right. Surely it couldn't be better if I tried something different.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
But who knows? What would a shorter shutter speed have looked like? What would a longer I don't know. After the first 10 or 15 shots are kind of the same thing, maybe, just maybe, try something different. So there's a tip for the episode. Don't just use one setting for an entire hour-long shoot. So we're taking the shoots up and down, and then you can start to – it goes up to about halfway up the sky.
You could almost say let your fingers walk the arc.
Exactly. The arc. That's what we did there. Anyway, but you can see it pulsing, so it'd go up to halfway up the sky and then down. And at the stage, it would be probably half of horizon to horizon. So it was huge. It was a monstrous display. Yeah. And then you can start to see the green show up, and you can see a bit of sort of yellowish. And in the photos, you're getting like yellow, orange, magenta, a little bit of purple, green, almost like a rainbow effect at some points. So it was very cool. I mean, it was really, really cool.
Wow.
So I came home and processed a couple of photos. It didn't need a lot of work doing to them, but a little bit of contrast, that kind of stuff, and a couple of them had to kind of tone down the color because they're a bit over the top,
right?
Yeah, which is kind of funny, which maybe a different shutter speed might have fixed. Who knows? So I get this message yesterday afternoon from someone who's been following me for ages, and a bit of a strange name, so I think it's a pseudonym kind of name.
Okay,
and she messaged. She goes, "Oh, look, my family used to own one of those boat sheds down there."
Oh, wow.
For 40 years. And I've got so many great family memories of going down there and boating and all this sort of stuff over all the years. And I was showing my dad the photos because it was his place. And he goes, "Oh, I reckon the guy'd sell some to me." He wanted a couple of photos of memories because they don't own the boat sheds anymore. But, you want to. So they messaged me and said, So I worked out a price for them for a couple of digital files, and we arranged it. And they sent the money through. I sent the files over. And I said, I had a funny experience down there 10 or 15 years ago. And I explained the story about photographing this. She goes, "That's my dad." So this guy who I photographed like 15 years ago happened to see my photos on the internet of a person I don't know.
Yeah.
And see, I wanted to buy them. It turns out he's the guy I took the photos of. And it was like, what a bizarre experience. The way stuff links. Yeah.
Totally.
And then the woman goes, "Have you ever spoke at the Lal Lal," which is a country area of Victoria, "Lal Lal Photographic Society?" I said, "Yeah, I did once years ago, and they were going to invite me back again, but there's a woman called Christina who was supposed to get in touch with me and invite me." She goes, "Oh, I was out shooting Aurora with her last night." What the hell? She goes, "We'll invite you again, and Bill, who's the old guy, he wants to come along." And I said, "Great," because at this, when I did that talk at this photographic society, across the road from where they meet is this old bluestone water tower that's hollow in the base where you can walk in, and it's a best natural light studio.
Yeah, I said, right. "Good,
bring Bill along, I'll photograph him again." So that's what we're going to do.
Awesome.
What a funny little...
Isn't it such a small world?
It is, the funny little links you can get in photography and connections and...
Yeah.
and stuff like that. So so that was really kind of cool. I made some money, which was good, and it never hurts. Had some fun with the kids. The wife, don't know what happened to her. Now she sort of settled down and didn't flare up any worse than that Friday night was like the peak.
Yeah.
So that's been good. Mind, she's gone back to work today, so the stress may come back. But her ears were swollen.
Oh.
Yeah, her ears like twice their normal size. Her face was swollen. It was
wow.
Crazy bad, yeah. And so I'm pretty sure it's all stress. So jeez,
that's not good.
So that's my photo adventure for the couple of days. But I have an audio thing I wanted to talk to you about.
Oh, yeah?
Since 2005, Shutters Inc. has been a labour of love. But beyond the time required to produce it, there is also a financial commitment. If you find value in the podcast and would like to help keep the servers running, hit up the Patreon link, which is in the show notes. Even a couple of dollars a month will help. Much appreciated. Now, back to the podcast.
My good buddy Ren, singer-songwriter, released a new song this weekend, last week.
Oh, okay.
Excellent song. It's amazing. He sums up his whole journey of health issues all in one song, and great storytelling. But that's irregardless of that, because we know how much we love that. Mm-hmm. The song's called Troubles, and it samples a song from like the 1940s called Troubles So Hard.
Okay.
And it's basically, nobody knows my troubles but God. And the song was from a black woman who's, I think, the daughter or granddaughter of slaves.
Right.
And it's he got permission to sample this track. And that's all irrelevant. What is irrelevant? He did this little YouTube clip saying, this is how I work to create sounds in my songs sometimes.
Yeah.
And he got this sample of Trouble So Hard from like the 1940s, and he put it through a synth to make to do something to affect the sound a little bit, make it a bit more electronic sounding.
I haven't heard it yet, but it sounds like what you are describing is what's called a vocoder.
Possibly, but okay. What was really interesting, though, because then I put this filter on that chops out most of the sample and just leaves little tiny bits of it.
Right, yep.
Right, and then he goes, so watch this. He presses this button, and it chops out, but it created this phenomenal beat.
Yep.
So this vocal track became electronic,
becomes the rhythm track,
and it became yeah, and it was almost like a little it was astounding how you can turn vocals into something. I mean, it creates a beat that you could use to create a song without having to know how to do beats.
Yep.
I was just blown away. The stuff the musicians, I guess the vision, and why I'm talking about it, because it kind of relates to photography a little bit to me.
Okay.
In that, the way someone has a vision on how to do something with something and create something totally new.
Yeah.
You know? So to even have the thought process that if I did this, then this, and this process, I get this end result, which is somewhat unpredictable or unexpected, or he might know exactly what he's going to get. But and I think that's a lot of what we do in photography is, you know, the way we see the world and frame the world and expose the world. You know, you've got to have that same kind of vision. There's a similar vision between the two things.
Yeah. Yeah,
I find I get a lot of inspiration about from photography in other areas.
Yeah,
you know, in other
media.
Yeah, just how other people approach creative endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
I guess
is
always fascinating. I'm not sure if we talked since last. I did a talk at a camera club the other week.
Okay,
that was
that one?
That was in Berwick. In right. Victoria, the Berwick Viewfinder. This was a lovely night out. It was a 2.5 hour drive to get there, right. Which is a friggin' long time. And all bumper to bumper traffic the entire way.
Yeah.
So that's joyful. That's just simply joyful. But it was lovely. They shared me a lovely dinner at the pub, which was good. Yeah, and a drink. Coke Zero. Oh, I'm going to be driving and I need to be talking. And I did my classic, my photos are shit and I don't know why I bother talk.
Right.
And here's an interesting thing. A little guy came up to me then, a little old guy. And camera clubs tend to have a fair amount of little old guys, you know. And this little old guy came up to me and he said, oh, I just want to thank you for your talk. Because I'm never sure how this talk's going to go over, especially with camera club people, because it's not really talking about photography per se, but – your own battle with being a creative and your own battle with your own inner negativity. And it's actually inspired by the song Hi Ren by Ren, right, funnily enough. So that's actually where the motivation came from. And when I do this talk, I wear a T-shirt with Hi Ren on the front, not the actual picture of the guy in the wheelchair.
Nice.
And so I'm never really sure how it's going to go over because it's not talking about technique or critique or all those sort of things. And he came up and he goes, oh, just want to thank you. He said, I've found over the last couple of years, I've really been focusing my photography on shooting for competitions rather than shooting for my own joy.
Yeah, right.
And I haven't been enjoying my photography for so long, and I think it's just pointed out to me why. So I'm going to start shooting for me again.
Yeah.
And I said, well, good on you, little dude. Yeah, if you can just do one thing like that for one person and made the talk worthwhile. But a whole bunch of these oldies come up and say, just brilliant, you know.
Yeah.
And then another lady from a message, I can't remember if it was the same club or a different club, but who'd been seeing the same talk, said, we've been talking at the board level, you know, the committee level for the club, and we've decided that we're going to keep doing competitions because the members like it, but we're going to do one night every 2 months now, a section of the night where it's people get to just talk about their photo. It's no critique. It's no, I could have done this better. They say, I took this photo and this is why it's special to me. And actually talk about the art and the joy and the all the good stuff about why we take photos.
Nice. Yeah.
And the majority of my talk about my photos are, if they're very active going out and taking photos themselves isn't good enough, the photos never will be.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've got to have the joy of doing.
Yeah.
Because relying upon anything else is a fool's venture.
Yeah.
So I thought it was really nice. It's just changing that mindset of a club. And then bizarrely enough, having talked about that, came through just a little bit ago from David Duchemin, our good buddy Dave, two questions that will change the way you make photographs.
Right.
So he's asking two questions. And question one is, how do you want the image to feel and what does that look like? So he says, if you're open to a quick exercise, answer these two questions for me. What do you love that conveys mood in an image? What makes your heart skip a beat? Many of the elements and choices that bring mood to an image are felt somewhat universally, but the ones we most like working with, the ones we most want to see in our images, are a matter of preference. I'd love to hear what those mood hooks are for you. My top three would have to be backlight. God, I love backlight. Point of view. Love point of view. And the mystery that shadows create. He's got me. He had me at a hello, Bruce. What are yours? You can drop these comments into my blog here. So maybe I'll put the link in for that as well.
Yeah, sure.
If there's people out there who don't follow David Duchemin, he's one of the few photographers in the world I follow, not because I'm elitist or I think I'm too good, I'm just too lazy to follow it. But I find always that everything he says resonates, and there's not a lot of people I can say that about.
Yeah.
If nothing else, go and read people's comments, just to see what people say. Why am I taking this photo? What am I trying to achieve? And yeah, I don't know, with the Aurora stuff, it's pretty easy. I want reasonably interesting foreground and I want some color in the sky.
Yeah.
But there's nothing emotional about any of that for me, you know. But when I photograph a person, you know, it's about expression, it's about feeling, it's about, you know, the mystery of the, you know, the whole crap about, oh, you want to photograph their soul, which you can't do, but you can. I went to my mother-in-law's yesterday for Mother's Day for my wife, and she wanted a photo of her and daughter together.
Yeah.
And yeah, the mother-in-law. Now I was being a bit cheeky, and she was giving me a bit of the look. Yeah, and she always has a fairly stern face in a photo anyway. So I started cracking the joke. Yeah, and I said, don't give me that, not that look, no, and until she started to break up, and that's when I took the photo.
Yeah.
And the life and the joy that's in that photo is so much greater than look at me, take the photo.
Yeah.
And so also I feel something when I look at, I felt something about the experience of taking the photo.
Yeah.
Let alone just the experience of then seeing the end result, because that experience of taking it was joy, and then the end result reflects that. And I think that's what I want to try and get out of my photos. And I don't really care if other people like it or not, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just that. And the last thing I've been doing photographically this last however long it's been is trying to find a bloody model. I've got a photo shoot on Monday for a client. He's booked me for a one-on-one. And he wants a topless, tattooed, dark-skinned model with a bit of a character face, with a bit of, you know, which you think, oh, that shouldn't be that hard to find.
Right, and we should specify male, yeah.
Male, yeah. I've been looking everywhere to try and find, could not find anyone at all. Modeling agencies, fitness groups, you
know, really? Wow.
Everywhere. I know. I would have thought it would be lining up and having trouble trying to find which one to use. Then he goes, oh, what about an elderly model? Yeah, so again, couldn't find anyone for that. So ended up finding a quasi-okay looking Maori-looking dude.
Right.
That hopefully going to be okay. But like, couldn't believe it. It's the hardest struggle I've ever had to find a model.
Wow.
Very weird indeed. Yeah. But anyway, so here's a classic funny example. I'm being employed and a model's being employed and I'm employed for lighting and posing and all that sort of stuff. So he can take a photo to enter into a photo competition.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It's not the first time he's employed me. This guy flew me to Ayers Rock once to take photos for a photo competition.
Jeez.
Okay. Yeah, I know. But he's a lovely guy, though. He's a lovely guy. And he just shoots with a point-and-shoot camera. So he's not like he's a photographer, per se.
Right.
But he just likes taking the odd shot and posting in his community and stuff. And
yeah.
Very funny.
Wow.
So anyway, that's it. that's amazing. And what have you been up to? Did I hear you did a photo shoot?
Yeah. So Kath found something on Facebook and she flicked it through to me. And it's a couple of photographers here in this area, in the Morisset, Currumbong region, who are just getting started again. They used to run these workshops. Well, not, it's not really a workshop per se. It's more just like a shooting opportunity, yeah.
Yeah.
It's very similar to what I used to be doing.
So they get a Red Riding Hood in a forest and they get a bunch of people to come along and shoot it.
Oh, no.
So everyone can get the Red Riding Hood shots.
Did you get those videos that I sent you that I shot on my phone?
Yeah, I didn't look at them.
Oh, man, you should have a look at this space. You would freaking love it. So anyway, basically what they've got is this big
space
building that is separate from the house on a large block of land. And within this second building, they have got about 9 or 10 different decorated sets that every one of them is a completely different look. Like there's a boudoir set.
Yeah, I know
set,
the type.
There's a
yeah, I know the set. Type, yeah. Yep. I know the type.
And yeah, and so basically they had organized this shoot and
have they got the wooded forest set for the Red Riding Hood shots?
Not like my Red Riding Hood shots, no. But there was
what about
something
like everybody
that had
else's
some greenery.
Red Riding Hood shots?
There was some that had some greenery in there. Yeah, so anyway, so basically they had a handful of.
Did they have a graffiti wall? Yeah, of course it is. The rustic, crumbly wall, but painted wall kind of look, yeah, textured wall. Oh, they're letting themselves down.
There might have been.
I'm just trying to think what other cliches they could be using.
50s diner?
Of course, 50s diner.
Yep. The three-dimensional wooden cube that you can put a model inside.
Oh, of course.
And they've got an old, like a retro 50s Australian kitchen, which is still not fully decorated. They're in the
process. To put the little lady back where she belongs.
That's right. yeah, so there's a whole bunch of different sets. So
I'll go look at the videos.
So, Bruce,
when you say I would love this place,
it sounds like you wouldn't.
Just on the quiet. So the cliche studios, is that what they're called? Did you say?
Okay, fine.
Instagram or us.
Yeah, well,
I get the reasoning for these places, and I see lots of them down here in Melbourne as well.
See, that's the thing. I'd never seen a place like this.
Look, in like Vietnam, there's actually entire like movie lot studio spaces where you can go in just to shoot.
Wow.
Yeah, where there's just every theme you can imagine over acres.
Wow.
Of space where it's just different shooting scenarios. You know, it's fake streets, fake railway lines. You know, everything. Wow. Yeah. And there's lots of those through Asia where it's an entire production system, yeah.
Wow.
So it's a bizarre and so look, I can certainly get, again, I understand the convenience of needing those spaces. It's just, I don't know, if you go to that location, you're kind of taking lots of the same photos everyone else has taken.
Yeah.
And it's all, it's not, well, again, I don't ever want to come across, I'm a snob, but I don't want to come across as a, it's not snobbery in people wanting to do Red Riding Hood shots. It's just like, and it goes back to exactly what we were just talking about before with David Isherman. Where's the nourishment of the soul?
Right.
For recreating images you've seen of others.
Right.
Shooting exactly the same theme you've seen. Oh, I've seen this theme 50 times on Instagram. I want to go shoot exactly the same type of thing. I don't know.
Okay.
And again, it could be just my mindset, but for me, I find it non. And look, I'm as guilty as anyone. I mean, my nuns with guns shoot in the past, nuns with machine guns resting on old cars. I mean, I get it. It's cliche, Bruce. Everyone. Actually, I don't think I've ever seen a nuns with guns. But I know we've certainly done plenty of cliche stuff in the past. Yeah. And we all know that cliches become cliches because they work.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I get, and I know everyone's on a different journey and different levels of experience. And, you know, you want to have some wins.
Yep.
So you want to go out and have an environment that's a lot easier set up for you. So there's, I can certainly get lots of reasons why these places exist. And maybe I'm just at that point in my photography where I'm more wanting nourishment from the things that I do with it than the result.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
So being in that kind of environment wouldn't give me joy, so I wouldn't want to do it. That's right. Probably the better way to say it.
Fair
I
enough.
Think.
But I think, as you said 30 seconds ago, it does come down to each individual photographer and where they're at on their journey, you know, because if you are just starting out, or, you know, you're like me, maybe a mid-level photographer, then, you know.
You're a what? Sorry, Bruce?
Bugger off.
Well, you can't set me up like that and not expect me to knock it down. Come on.
I don't know. I saw the thing that Kath sent through and I thought, yeah, looks like it'd be a good opportunity to get some different looks and...
No, get some same looks.
Yeah, well, yeah, okay. Different looks within my catalogue of work. And I took along, you know, a couple of softboxes and speed lights and, you know, just tried to work with that because I feel like that's a bit of a weak link for me, like knowing how to work with modifiers and off-camera flash. And that's
a great thing just to the more you do it, the more you...
The better you get,
Yeah, absolutely. And I reckon the phrase "the better you get" to me more means not to say that you learn to light better, but you often learn to fix problems better.
Yes,
yeah, exactly. I think that, learn how to solve. So, yeah, because I think when it comes to lighting, there's only X amount of styles of lighting,
sure,
and we tend to fall back on the style of lighting that we like the look of the most, which makes perfect sense.
Yep.
I like David Duchemin before saying he likes backlighting, so we like a certain type of lighting, but solving the problems that lighting creates is where the most growth comes from most people. So the more you do it, the better you are at fixing those or seeing those problems whilst you're shooting rather than when you get home and looking at them on the computer.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. So did you get some good photos?
One or two that I was happy with and a lot that I was a bit like, nah.
For what reason? What's the nah?
I think it was just that the lighting I had wasn't working for me. It was probably angles. And you do feel a little under the pump in terms of time.
Yeah.
You know, because we had, I think, about 7 or 8 photographers and about 7 or 8 models. So in theory, everyone should have been, you know, able to be occupied all of the time. But you did kind of feel like there was a bit of pressure to get through a set or through working with one model and then move on to work with other models. And
So it wasn't timed. You weren't said, okay, everyone's got 20 minutes per. It was just implied.
Nothing was vocalized of you have to be, you know, through a set or finish working with a model in any given period. But I guess having run those types of events myself,
I was very conscious of
not hogging a model or hogging a set for too long.
Because you're too nice a guy.
Yeah, well, I guess. But I've had customers, you know, in the past who've said to me after an event, oh, you know, I didn't really get enough time to do this or to do that. And so I guess I was conscious of that and not wanting to be the one that was holding things up. And
yeah, totally get that. And that's why these guys should have times per per setup. You got, okay, everyone's got 20 minutes per model or something like that, and a 5-minute break in between or whatever to freshen up, to have a drink, to move from location to location, all that kind of stuff, because that way the guy, people who do overstay, they're welcome in one spot, have a known time they've got to move on, and people like yourself who are worried about overstaying can relax a bit more because you're happier working within the structure of this is how long you've got. I completely see why you would feel the pressure and your images would suffer that because you've got all those other things going on in your head.
And
you settle for stuff. Oh, I won't bother fixing that because it'll take time. And remembering, at the end of the day, let's say you have 20 minutes. You could set up for 15 of it and shoot for 5, and 5 minutes of shooting is a lot of photos. At the end of the day, but that's the pressure we feel all the time that we have to be shooting when we've got someone in front of us, not setting up. And I've always said that the longer you can take setting up and not shooting, the better your photos will be.
Right.
The less photos you take, the more good ones you'll have.
Right.
It's exactly the opposite of what people expect. Yeah. If I take enough photos, there'll be some good ones. No. If you take a few photos but spend a lot of time getting everything right, then you only need one. At the end of the day. And that's the thing you get from experience, from doing it. And that's what those places are good for. And even being under that kind of perceived pressure is a good thing as well, you know. It's all good learning. Because next time you'll know.
I think if anything, it gave me just a gentle reminder of how much I need to practice.
Yeah.
You know, and do more of it just to, you know, get. You know, there were silly things like coming home and looking at the images and going, oh, you know, this particular set, I've got no catch lights in the eyes anywhere.
Oh, okay,
Things like that I should have...
Where a centimetre here or there could have made all the difference.
Exactly.
Exactly.
You know, just you know, little things like that. Like when I say, you know, I shot a lot of crap, that's the kind of thing I mean. Like everything else about it was fine, but just those little nuances...
Just paint something in Photoshop, dude. Serious.
Yeah.
Just a little dab a little bit of white paintbrush on the eye, bang, bang, job done.
Yeah, right.
Give it a try, because that's sometimes that's what you got to do.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Sometimes you just got to say, okay, I stuffed up, get a really small 100% opacity white paintbrush and just dab.
Yeah, right.
Okay. And you'll have catch lights.
Okay.
Yeah. Do it just for the experience of learning, just to say, okay, can I fix the problem? Yeah. Well, can I fix problems? I love everything about this shot except for this. We would easily clone out a stray hair without thinking two things about it. We'd take out the pimple. We'd clean up all sorts of stuff without thinking, well, why is this any different?
Yeah, true.
Yeah. So give it a try and just see if that is enough. This is interesting. To see if that is enough to elevate the image.
Yeah, right.
Did those catch lights really make – am I thinking, oh, the catch lights are what's making me not like this so much? And now once something's in there, did it make the difference or not?
Yeah, right.
Interesting little experiment to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. And try and remember, and we'll talk about next episode and tell me what you thought.
Sure.
Awesome.
All right, mate.
Awesome. Well, we had to do a short episode. We did have things to talk about, but maybe we'll leave them for next episode.
Yeah, I hurt my back yesterday, so I don't really want to be sitting for too long, and I'm sort of nearing the limits now. So
yeah, and it's a Monday morning, and I got work stuff to do as well, and a kid to wake up, and we pulled my kid out of school, my eldest kid out of school, and he's now doing homeschooling. I've got to get him out of bed at 10:07 and get him woken up and get him actually into school, getting up to school work. So yep. Dad's awesome. Job's never done.
That's it.
You got to look after your back.
Yep.
Be good to yourself.
You look after yourself, and we'll talk in a couple of weeks.
All right. See you, everybody.
Yeah.
Bye.
You've been listening to Shutters Inc. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.